You are listening to the Enormo Cast.
When it comes to cams, nobody stays ahead of the curve like Black Diamond. And until their climber engineers get antsy again, they've settled on quite the quiver of active protection. On top of the heap are the ultralight Camelots, the lightest, baddest cams in the land. Then, the venerable C4s have been updated time and again to achieve near perfection in smooth handling and bomber security. And rumor has it that if you hold a red C4 up to the light of an Indian Creek blood moon and whisper, "Camelot, Camelot, Camelot," a sentient coyote will trot up and teach you how to ring lock at last. And finally, for the thin end of things, the SuperTech Z4s round out the rack all the way down to the wee little maybe I can fall but I don't really want to fall, probably will hold but let's not find out number zero. The bottom line is nobody researches, redesigns, and continues to improve their cams like Black Diamond. So go to blackdiamondequipment.com or your favorite local shop and reward yourself with a couple new units for the coming season. You deserve it.
In the south of France, there is legendary Grimpon, Le Verdon, Le Calanque, Seyouze. But there is also the legendary wind, Le Mistral. A strong, cold, nearly resistless wind that can drive the people mad, but create conditions parfait pour escalade. One moment. Let me put down my baguette in my cigarette. Ah, ouais.
Now, La Sportiva has captured the masterly wind in a new shoe, the Mistral. Slightly downturned for precision, but also designed for performance and comfort. A sticky toe patch makes the Mistral an all-arounder for hooking and jamming alike. And let me tell you something, I have never slipped my feet into a more comfortable climbing shoe. Even performance snug, these things feel like stuffing your feet into a buttery croissant. But they climb way better than that, as croissants are much too flaky to ride any sort of edge. And forget about jamming. So if you're looking for a light, comfortable all-arounder, ride like the wind to Sportiva.com or your local shop and try on a Mistral and see if you ever want to take it off. Butter optional.
Listen, where are you playing in town? Are you playing here?
We're doing the Enormo Dome, whatever it is. It's terrific.
Oh,
it's
yeah, big house. Place. That side of town. That's a big nice. Place. You sold
what's
it
that
out.
20,000? I'll say
you really should.
Look, you better get up there before you panic. Those pens are loose.
You're very good. I have really enjoyed climbing with you.
We'll make it.
I don't think so. But we shall continue with style.
Good weather, bad weather. Now or later, anytime for climbing.
Today's show is brought to you by Black Diamond Equipment, La Sportiva, and with support from Maxim Ropes. Maxim has been keeping the Enormo Cast off the deck since 2012.
And don't forget our charter sponsor, Bonfire Coffee. Go to bonfirecoffee.com and enter Enormo at checkout for a discount on great coffee and to support the Enormo Cast.
And now back to the show.
Hello and welcome to the EnormoCast. This is your host, Chris Calouse. It is March 15th, 2024, about 10:15 here in Colorado. And this is an EnormoCast tweener, a show that goes between the full episodes here on the EnormoCast. On other podcasts, this would be bonus material, but you don't have to pay for shit over here at the EnormoCast, thanks to our sponsors, Black Diamond, Sportiva, Bonfire Coffee, Maxim Ropes, sometimes Peter W. Gilroy, sometimes Belay Specs. Anyway, that makes this podcast free for you guys. So support those sponsors. You'll keep getting free bonus content like this tweener with our friend and former guest, Harvey Wright. Do you guys remember Harvey Wright? Harvey Wright gave an awesome interview back in 2021 talking about some hard stuff, addiction, why climbing can't cure every problem that we have, and why love can. So I've stayed in touch with Harvey since that interview. We've been kind of long distance friends, but most of our chatting that goes on texts and in emails and stuff is about music. And Harvey has created a new album, Patio Pacifica, that he has out on Spotify. It's been out for a few months, but he wrote and recorded at least the demos while in a treatment facility for his addiction. And he's out the other side of that particular stint in rehab and promoting this album. He's playing with his old band, Ponytails. Even though he wrote this one on his own, that band is backing him up now again and doing a couple live gigs. So I thought I'd reconnect with Harvey. And though this is a climbing podcast, we mostly talk about music on this particular one, which is another reason to make it a tweener. And I kind of mix it up with some clips in there as well as some live performance by Harvey. So I thought I'd tuck it in here. And then in a few days, we'll get another regular episode up, kind of the full-length Enormacast treatment. And if you remember Harvey from his last interview, I know you're probably pretty excited about it because he gave good interview last time. Intense, deep, thoughtful. One quick little thing, if your morning is going great and you don't feel like hearing about addiction and or suicide attempts, kind of those heavy things, if those are the kind of things that bother you, or maybe it's just not the right moment right now as you're happily driving to the crag or whatever, then maybe check this one out later. I just wanted to give that heads up before you get too deep into this one. I'm not going to do an outro on this one, so let me do a couple things before we get into it. First of all, there's some music in this one. A couple of the tracks Harvey recorded just in his room, guitar and vocals, just a little bit before we actually connected to do the interview. So those are kind of live, raw, good sounding stuff. Also, I poke in a couple different clips from his album, Patio Pacifica, which can be found on Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, all over the place. I'll put some links in the show notes. You can follow up and find out where Harvey's music is, as well as some earlier albums that he's on from his band Ponytails. All out there, all ready to be listened to. Harvey would love if you checked them out. And lastly, if you guys catch this in time and you're up there in Vancouver or even in Squamish and want to head down to the big city for a wild night out, actually, I don't think this will be a crazy wild night. It'll be an amazing night. But Ponytails and Harvey have a gig coming up on March 29th at a place in Vancouver called China Cloud Studios. I got an address here, 524 Main Street, but that's all I know about it. For more information, the easiest thing to do is follow Ponytails Band on Instagram, or if you want to follow Harvey Wright, he's at Harvey Harvey on Instagram. The information's there about the gig coming up on the 29th of March, 2024. If you're hearing this after that, go follow them anyway, because they probably have more gigs if you're up there in Vancouver. Cool. All right, let's get to it. A little tweener with Harvey Wright. You Canadians deal with the giant loud trucks too. So yeah, out here on the Western Slope, you know, loud ass fucking trucks. So.
Especially in Squamish too, right?
Yeah.
You talking about your trip to Squamish. You're like, all I could hear was the fucking highway.
Yeah. Because they had to pin it up the hill, you know, from that stops that like the stoplight, you know, down at the, and then they got to, if they're leaving town, they got to pin it up the hill.
Yeah.
Or if the trucks are coming into town, they're jaybreaking like all the way down that fucking hill.
Yeah.
Anyway, that got me a lot of flack. So we don't need to go there too hard again.
Sorry to bring it up, you know, the view's nice.
It is, yeah. And maybe they're done with that bridge they're building.
Well, maybe there was construction or something, because you definitely hear road noise, but I don't know if it's that.
No, they were building, I think, like a bridge right there, like extending the lanes or something. Oh, and yeah, it was like they're putting pylons into, you know, basically the granite bedrock, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it was like kind of bowel shaking, you know, to quote Cake. from Going the Distance. But yeah, it was pretty funny. So yeah, but then I started like talking about it and people were not having it. So they're like, don't mess with our sweet Craig. Anyway, but all of us Americans think that as soon as you cross the border, it's just empty wilderness up there where you guys are living.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, mostly only within, but there's only people within about 100 miles of the border.
Right. So cool. Well, I pressed record and
rolling.
Yeah, we don't have to go do the normal deep hour and a half of normal cast because we already did that.
Yeah.
Although there's a lot of stuff to update. So I just had this idea, like I said in my email, of doing sort of a focus thing. That film you sent me was sort of like an addendum to the old film, to Crux.
Yeah.
So in that sense, like this could be just an addendum. And plus I wanted to hear your music and I'm excited that you're playing again and that you are that you've got this band rolling again and it seems to have played this huge part in this sort of I don't know what you chapter of your recovery or your whatever you want to call it. So let's just dive in with that. I mean, to reintroduce you, I guess a little bit, I'd love people to go back and listen to that original episode. It is a fan favorite. It's one of my favorites just because it's like, I don't know. I felt like I lucked into it in a lot of ways. the reason I was introduced to you is because of this film Crux. This was being filmed 4 or 5 years ago and came out post pandemic because that plays a big part in the film. And, there was this narrative in that film, I think, that they tried to make was that Harvey was going to be saved by climbing. And you being someone who's dealt with, substance abuse problems your whole life pretty much
20 years.
Yeah. But then in the film, the narrative kind of blew up as the pandemic hit and isolation, caused you to relapse. And then, that narrative that we want to believe in, this narrative that climbing would save you, would save everybody, can just teach us all to be okay in our bodies, in our minds, is absurd on its face because none of us are fine. We're not fine. Nobody's fine. And so that was kind of the introduction, and we did a really great interview and kind of became friends. I mean, we've never met in person, but I do check in with you and chat on text occasionally. So yeah, here we are again, Harvey. Welcome back to the Normalcast.
Hello. It's great to be back.
Yeah, but so talk about this music. That's what I really want to talk about and how it fit into, again, this year that you've spent in recovery.
Yeah, I mean, my band Ponytails, I'm the singer in it, and we were actually on the rise pretty, having some decent success, right up until 2020. We played our last show on, March 13th of 2020, just a few days before everything locked down. And that kind of shut everything down. And then the next 4 years to follow were pretty unstable for me. And other people in the band, there were some falling outs. A couple people had kids and it sort of was just flat. And my life was really, like I said, unmanageable, unpredictable, unstable. At the end of the Crux film, I ended up going to treatment. And that was... I've been twice since then, so three times in the last 4 years. And at the second treatment center, I went in there and I definitely did not have a plan of writing any music, but I walked in there and they had a piano there and, they take your phone away and you're on a whole bunch of restrictions. You have free time and stuff like that, but you're doing 8 hours of programming a day, therapy and stuff. And then you have some free time where you can watch TV or whatever. I've been around pianos before. I know one song that my mother taught me. She tried to teach me piano when I was a kid, three times, and I refused to learn. But as an adult, I've been I wish I could play that thing. But anyway, so they had this there and I pretty much had no distractions and a decent amount of free time. And they had this chord chart, this big, 3.5 foot long chord chart that was on top of the piano. And you could see which chords match with which and where to put your hands. And I just started noodling on the thing and wrote a few songs. And I can get more into it later, but it kind of spiraled into an album that I didn't expect to make. And you know, one of the questions you prompted me with earlier was how's music feeling like with sobriety and stuff like that. And it's interesting because the whole time Ponytails was going pre-pandemic, I was sober that whole time, and then I've done this album sober. So music's actually like, and rock and roll is kind of connected with sobriety and clarity and positive energy. And especially the songs on this record there. It was made in rehab completely. But my friend John even said, he's like, for a rehab album, it sounds pretty joyful. And yeah, they're songs that are really close to me. And I spent a lot of time with them. And they celebrate a lot of stuff. There's some, you know, darkness in there and processing of certain things in my life. But overall, it's a real happy album to listen to. And I love listening to it. I'm actually kind of obsessed with it. I listen to it all the time. And I'm not afraid to say that. I totally dig my music.
Well, that's cool. I mean, I you know, I have the same issue of like having to listen to myself, and sometimes I'm psyched on it and sometimes it's a little bit, you know, cringy. But I mean, are you able to like not sit there and sort of needle at the production and things like that, and you can just sit and enjoy what you created without second guessing your choices or anything like that?
Yeah, there was a period of that, like the process of making it. Like I said, I started playing these songs on the piano. I was in the treatment center's called Pacifica. The album's called Patio Pacifica because of that. And that's kind of an inside joke that I had with a client. But so I was there for 3 months, and the process of it ended up kind of being like, I would write a song on the piano on like a Monday and just start with like the music part. And then I'd kind of have lyrics by like midweek, and then I would practice those, and I was allowed to have my phone on Friday nights, Saturday for about 10 hours, and Sunday for about 6 hours. And so I would get my phone and my laptop, and then I would demo them in GarageBand, just playing them on the piano and a guitar and vocals. And then they would take my computer away, and I wouldn't get it again for the next week. And I wouldn't be able to listen to what I had recorded and stuff. And it was kind of this rush on Sunday before I had to turn my laptop in to sort of get it demoed. And then I wouldn't be able to be fucking around with it and sitting around on Instagram. So on Monday again, I'd kind of start messing around on the piano again. And by the end of the week, when I got my phone, I'd have another song. So I was there for 12 weeks and I ended up writing and recording 12 songs. And I had no idea what I was doing. I was just in GarageBand, you know, I've been in a studio before with Ponytails and had producers and stuff like that. So I picked up a couple tricks, but really had no idea, which was kind of cool because I think that's what made it sound like it did. And luckily the music is kind of 60s inspired. It's kind of feel good rock and roll that doesn't necessarily require a super high production value. Like I said, everything, the guitars are just coming out of a Princeton reverb with no other effects other than what's in the amp, some reverb, some trem. The vocals have some delay and a bit of verb, and pretty much that's it. So I had these demos, and they sounded pretty good, but they for sure sounded like demos. And I was like, well, maybe we can get a grant, and when I'm finished treatment, I can record this properly in a studio. But I ended up relapsing right away and having to go into another treatment center. We didn't get the grant money. And then here I am again, kind of in the same place. Like, well, I almost thought about releasing the demos as they were, but I was like, I think I can kind of make this a little bit better. And I opened up those files. And as soon as I made one thing better, I was like, okay, I can probably redo this. I retracked most of it, but I still left a piece in every song from the original demos, but I redid the vocals and guitars and used a different piano and made it sound better. And that was kind of risky, it felt like, because to take something that already sounds good and redo the entire fucking thing to make it sound like 15% better, the chances of making it worse, you know? So it was a little stressful. And then I was going to pay someone to mix it, because mixing's super important and I have no idea what I'm doing in mixing. But again, I was like, I'm in rehab. I don't have any money. So I guess I'll just mix it, and dove into that. And I guess where I'm going with that long-winded story to answer your question is, I listened to it and I'm like, yeah, some of the parts blend together. Like the mixing could have been better. It could have been mastered professionally. You know, it could have sounded, air quotes, better, but like it sounds like it does. And it's cool. And I wouldn't want to change it, because there's some magic in how it recorded. And I did have to kind of come around full circle to that. But yeah, I mean, it's music, right? Like it's, doesn't have to be a certain way. And I think I'm happy with the job I did. So
as long as we've gotten this far into talking about making the record, let's do a song right now that you recorded this morning, a version of Bad for Love.
Yeah.
Anything you want to say about this song?
This song actually came a little later. I wrote it after being at Pacifica. It was the one song I added to the album. And you know, if you listen to the last podcast, or if you know me at all, I talk about love a lot and loving yourself and this positivity. And I was having this conversation with my friend Nathan, and it was when I was still using. And, you know, not trying to like spiritually bypass myself, but really deep into the drugs, but just trying to take that compassionate approach to my life being pretty bad. And I said something like, well, you know, like as long as you keep like your heart open and try to love it, it'll be okay. And my friend just looked me dead in the eyes and he goes, yeah, well, cocaine is bad for love. And I was just like, it hit me deep. And I was like, that's a good line. And so I wrote this song, and it was a song that needed to be written, you know, like, for me personally, it's a honest from the heart acknowledgement of the person I want to be and the person I am and the exact thing that gets in the way of that.
Just no good for love.
what you were talking about when you were in the treatment center writing the tunes the first time, it occurred to me that like that is actually a brilliant, you know, idea for a, you know, a songwriting retreat. Like, yeah, if somebody wanted to sort of create something like that, that format actually sounds pretty awesome.
Totally.
You know, like, okay, now stop fucking with your phone for the next week and go write some music, because the phone is such this distraction, and the technology, even though you needed it and you used it, it's also this distraction, I think, in a lot of ways that like takes people away from the music that they created and puts it into this realm of like, well, like you said, well, now it needs to, for it to be a real song, it needs to have this happen, and for it to be professional sounding, it needs to have this happen. And you know, these great tracks or these great songs that have passed down to through time, and you know, you talked about the 50s and 60s and the technology like that the Beatles were using, you know, was so primitive.
Yeah,
you know, the original four tracks and things like that. And yeah, so it's just fascinating that it's almost like this crutch, but they took it away from you for 5 days while you got, and you became creative.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people do artist retreats or residencies in order to do that, and this is pretty much what that was, plus with a bunch of therapy in between. It was, you know, it made my experience really pleasant and joyful. You know, going to rehab obviously sucks, but I typically tend to thrive there because I'm actually safe, you know, and after a couple of weeks of settling down, I feel really good, and it just allowed a lot of that creativity to come out of me. I don't know if in the future if I'll ever have an output of creativity like that again. It's okay if I don't, but concentrated into 12 weeks like that. And yeah, having the laptop taken away so I couldn't just be sitting there twiddling knobs and messing around. It was just like, you know, the songs got kind of encapsulated, and then I got to do another one without thinking about the last. So yeah, it was a great format.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of ironic though, you know, what you have to go through to get there, so to speak. I mean, the actual retreat, the real version of this for like, if they did turn it into a music retreat, would be out of your pay scale anyway, you know? So it's like you wouldn't get to go.
Totally.
You know, it would be in the woods of Banff and like, you know, it would cost like, you know, $6,000 a week to go and do it.
Yeah, totally. So. Not subsidized by the government, that's for sure.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, again, we have this like the original narrative that we started this whole thing on, or that the guys that made Crux was, again, this like, you know, save him through climbing. And that now we have this sort of weird narrative where the music is this thing that kind of kept you steady, and is currently keeping you steady in the sense that you know, you said like your music output has been generally through sobriety. But I had that question about more of the lifestyle. I know you're going to start playing out. I mean, I don't know if you have shows beyond, you have one coming up in Vancouver, like what, on the 8th or something like
February 1st. It's a week away.
Oh. Okay. Rad. Yeah. You know, and you start playing out, and for me, playing out music, I've always been in bar bands. That's as far as I've ever gotten. And bar bands come with bars right there in front of the, you know, and they come with, you know, it's like the bartenders who treat you right put the pitchers on the stage and, you know, all that sort of thing. And so it's like, that was kind of my question is entering that world. I have never had a problem with alcohol, but, you know, I almost always drank when I played.
Yeah.
You know, I did a couple shots before, you know, the liquid courage to get up on stage. Everybody has some sense of stage fright, I think, or at least performance anxiety.
Yeah.
So yeah, what about that? I mean, what kind of, you know, ideas do you have about safeguarding the temptation that comes with that world, the late night after parties and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, my story has been so public, and the people in the band and the people coming to the show and just my openness with it is kind of what protects me. I mean, if anybody saw me with a beer at that show, it would be totally weird. right. not just weird, but well, it would be very weird, and then it would be like, what the fuck? Like, so I've kind of made it possible to not, it just wouldn't be allowed. Right. Like, so it's not even an option. So that's a good safeguard. You know, I've been through my fair share of grief and loss and depression and lots of those sort of dark things that are associated with using an addiction. But I've kind of discovered over these last few years that most of my relapses happen and most of my tendencies to use are centered around positive energy and an excess of excitement and joy. And so I get, sure, a little bit nervous going on stage, but I love performing and I love being up there and I get psyched and high off that. And so that level of excitement where you're like, wow, I'm stoked. Like, that is kind of usually the thing that makes me be like, let's keep this going.
Keep
let's
that keep going, it up right.
kind of thing.
Yeah. I think that's the, I think, isn't that the, I mean, that's the age old pitfall.
Yeah.
And when the lights go down and the, you know, everybody goes home, now what?
Yeah.
Kind of a thing. Yeah. I mean, that's something that's afflicted, you know, musicians for
yeah
all of time.
I'll be going to a friend's house after the show.
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting. That's what you got to do. Don't you have to be active towards, you know, like I said, create situations to make sure that that things are sort of on the steady?
For sure. And yeah, the biggest help has been my openness with it, because that's created a community that I'm surrounded with, whether it's, and I'll share my story with anybody. I'm not really that protective of it, nor do I think I personally need to be, because that's what's protected me, is not hiding it. So whether it's people at work or just people on Instagram I've never met or my closest friends, they all know I had a super bad problem smoking crack. Like, it's out there. And so when people are in the know, they're, you can't go breaking the rules.
Right.
It makes accountability easier. Yeah, so I'm very grateful that I have a community of people that have, you know, not judged me for it, and they've been there to listen and just, you know, been in my life with what it is.
Yeah, I kind of had a line of questioning, but you've sort of answered it, but about this idea of even doing my show, you know, and that's been kind of the crux of what we've talked about. And I think it brought you a lot of love from you know, what I jokingly called the Enormo Nation. Yeah. I find them all to be very, I mean, honestly, my fans are amazing and they're very sympathetic and they're willing to listen and hear what you had to say. And so, and I know, I'm sure some of them followed you on Instagram now and have encouraged you. So,
yeah.
But it is interesting because I do also feel sometimes like, am I working this voyeuristic angle? But I also feel good that we've kept in touch.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't just a one and done. And hopefully you've found that helpful. And I've enjoyed talking to you. And we get to connect on music, which I think is this cool thing that goes beyond just talking about climbing, which has been a lot of fun and why I wanted to have you on the show.
Sending each other songs when you're in the hot tub.
Yeah. Sharing embarrassing old recordings.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Those are ripping, man. You know, Crux was received really well. Like, I expected it would be, but I thought, sure, like on the internet or somewhere, there's got to be some kind of comment that's like negative. But I have not heard one, and they probably still exist. But it was amazing the reception that film got. And I think I was obviously making the film, I was pretty open and vulnerable about things. But I think since that film and since things have progressed, being received that way or having that sort of acceptance has made me even more willing to share and more vulnerable, just because it didn't backfire on me. It actually did the opposite. And it's interesting because I get a fair amount of praise for, oh, like, it's so amazing how you've shared this story so openly and vulnerable. And I understand that, you know, because it's hard for people, and it's probably hard for people because maybe they haven't been received in the way that I have by my friends and community. But it's an interesting thing to get praise for, because I don't know if I like to think of it as like I'm being vulnerable. I'm just being me, and I'm just saying what my life is and sharing a part of my humanity that shouldn't be vulnerable, because it's just your humanness, right? Like, right. It's, and we all have problems. And if you're a human, you're allowed to have problems, and you're allowed to have a problem that might take 20 years to fix, or 5 trips to rehab, or ups and downs, or moments where you're like, oh, I totally got this nailed, and moments where you're like, whoa, I thought I had it nailed and I do not. You know, we're allowed to have that. I don't wish it on anybody, but I hope that anybody experiencing something difficult understands that they're allowed to have that difficulty, and it doesn't mean that they're wrong, you know, or they've failed. It's just a part of being human.
I just can't imagine anybody, at least that who listens to this show, like coming down on you in some negative way. It would be sort of shocking. But then there's also like kind of intent, because, you know, there could be someone that came in and said, dude, why doesn't this guy get his fucking shit together? You know, but then there could be someone who came to you and, you know, with open arms and said, dude, why don't you get your shit together?
Exactly.
You know, so it's like, you know, it's not like, you know, sort of looking at your situation and kind of begging you, or like, you know, whatever, cajoling or anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you've got friends that do that. Like, Harvey, come on. Like, I love you, man, but come on.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's not like an attack, but it could be if that was totally the intent, you know? So it's just kind of a fascinating thing to think about. And, you know, putting your story out there it's probably helpful. You know, I can only imagine that people look at you and see somebody that, you know, puts out this positive energy and finds that encouraging in their sort of darkest hours. And commiserating with somebody is a form of therapy, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing was like a very difficult pathway to like real love and real self-acceptance and tolerance. And I don't think I would have ever gotten, I haven't crossed the finish line on that by any means.
Certainly, yeah.
But I don't know if I would have gotten that without the road that addiction took me down. I mean, when we finished Crux, like going back to that sort of narrative of this saved my life, we know that it didn't. And I had thought it did, and it did for a period of time. But then, you know, you get more shit comes your way. Mm-hmm. And things actually got like way worse after Crux. There's some pretty dark parts in that movie. But, you know, after that, my father died, and I came back to Vancouver when we taped that episode, and I hadn't really landed properly. And then I was mostly into doing powder cocaine and drinking. And around that summer of 21, I got introduced to a new method of using coke and smoking it. And once I got into that, that just really took things off. I had an overdose that was very close to killing me. That just really got messy. And I had to love myself through that. And that's what kept me alive, you know? And and Crux kind of ends with like my own attempt on my life. And I, when I was up there on that bridge and that pedestrian kind of pulled me down and gave me a hug and I cried in his arms, when I sort of woke up from that, I was like, never again. You know, like, I don't care how bad it gets. I'm not gonna like pull away that love for myself. And that was hard, because when you're alone in your bedroom and you're spending all your money on drugs and you're isolating and you're smoking crack and you're doing all this ugly shit that's not really commendable, it's pretty easy to hate yourself. And I did, but I would bring it back, and it was like this training of like tolerance for something that was really hard to tolerate. And that's what brought me back to, you know, going to treatment and doing these things, because I don't think, even though I experienced hardcore addiction, I don't think my heart's cut out for that, man. It's
yeah, I mean, there's an irony in what you're saying, you know, these things of like, I don't know, accepting it. And I think someone listening might be like, well, no, you don't accept it. You don't like, you know, go towards it in a way. But it sounds like that was a path to healing for you in this kind of, I'm almost like, what's the word I'm looking for? Contrarian way, like accepting it made you love yourself, and therefore you could see a sort of a pathway to treatment.
Yeah, totally. And it wasn't like I was doing my best at that time. Like, that's right. What my best looked like.
Right.
And so I had to accept it. And I didn't accept it in a passive way. It was hard to accept. Like, but if I was any harder on myself, I don't know if that would have, you know? Like, so going through that suffering gave me I don't know how to word this. I got to know myself deeper. I learned a higher tolerance for myself and a higher value of myself and what I can go through, where I want to be. And I'm glad that the using and those dark times didn't like strip me of that or take that away, that value. Like, I had to say to myself, like, regardless of if you smoke crack the rest of your life and you never do anything, like, you still have value as a human being, you know? And I want all of us to be able to feel that in some way. It doesn't matter what your life looks like. You have value being here in the world.
So let me ask you this. We're on, you know, this is my running NormaCast joke. This is a climbing podcast.
Yeah.
So, you know, and ostensibly we met because of your climbing. That was the basis of the movie Crux. And so I want to ask you where that is these days. Where does climbing fit into your life?
It's in a good place.
As far as, yeah.
I'm psyched. Yeah, from 2021 up until just this summer of 23, I don't think I really did any. And that was kind of a shock from as devoted as I was to it, but life didn't really allow me to it. But this, I went to treatment in February of 2023. I'm still here now. I'm in my last week, so I'll be a year coming up here in a week or so. And I finished my primary care, the 90 days I guess, mid-May. And I had an amazing summer. I counted my pitches. I did 322 pitches between May 1st and October 1st, which is the most I've ever done in a season. It was great. I was out there all the time because I was kind of working part-time. And yeah, I jumped right back into it and had an awesome, awesome summer. And I even took some people from the treatment center climbing. It was really funny. And this was back in like March, so we were only like a month in. And this place, you're allowed to get a weekend pass. There's a little, maybe more freedom here than the last place. But unless you're past 60 days of being here, you need to leave with someone else, another client who's over 60 days. And I don't drive. And my friend, my climbing partner, Travis, drives. And there was a, you know, like a nice weather window coming in March for Squamish. And I was like, oh, maybe we could go climbing. And the other clients I was sharing the floor with here, like they knew I climbed. And maybe they'd seen Crux at that point. And one of the guys, Casey, he was like, I'd really like to go climbing with you. And I was like, there's a weather window coming up. You want to go to Squamish? And so I called my friend Travis and I was like, hey, can you want to go climbing? I've got to, you know, take my friend from the Surrey rehab and we'll go. And we ended up doing a multi-pitch, like a pretty easy one, but still like five pitches. And it just blew this guy's mind who'd never been climbing before. We did Skywalker and Squamish and we got to the bottom of the route and there was snow at the base. The whole thing was running with water. I hadn't led a pitch in like 2 years and I had to rope gun the whole thing, but I did it. And that like really amped me up. And that kind of started just a great summer of climbing. I was supposed to go to the Valley in October and make another attempt on El Cap, but I had to cancel it. But yeah, I'm in full swing and we're going to start getting good weather here in BC pretty soon. So
last time I checked, El Cap's still there.
Yeah.
So you should be good.
Permits and weird, and they're going to take all the bolts out.
They may take all the bolts out though. So you better not wait too long. But with the government, even that'll take years and years and years, even if it did come to pass, but besides, doing it illegally would be more your style. Anyway.
There we go. That's rock and roll.
Exactly. Well, cool. Let me ask you this about ponytails. You mentioned, you know, there was some, the band didn't end well, or at least if it ever ended, but it people went their own ways and whatever happened. So tell me about reforming. What's the constitution of the band now and who's backing you up? And what does it look like now?
There's six of us. Yeah, we got two guitars, bass, drums, my friend singing all the harmonies because I tracked so many harmonies on that album. Did I forget anything? Piano, bass, two guitars, drums, two singers. And some of the people I've met newly, some of them I've known for a while from the music circle. You know, I had this album recorded and shared it with some people and people liked it and wanted to play it with me, which I'm very grateful for. And the band is just, I call it the safest rock and roll band in the world because everybody's so sweet. We're just like all, there's no egos. Nobody really parties that hard. Like it's not, you know, crazy. We're all kind to each other. Everybody's like spiritual. We're like just this little like Buddhist rock and roll trauma-informed rock and roll, we're calling it. So we only kind of really started seriously rehearsing in November because climbing season took a lot of my time and some other things were going on, but we've been rehearsing a lot, getting ready for the show, and we've just got it dialed like just in time. It was a lot teaching five people 12 songs that I wrote and getting them to play it, but they're all incredible players and I'm really happy with how the live versions of the songs are sounding and just over the moon to play this show. It's really cool too that it's happening on the last day of my stay at the treatment center I'm at now. It's called Phoenix Society, and so it's happening at the completion of 1 year, and I'm moving back into my apartment the day after the show. So there's this album that happened during this time, and it's being celebrated with this show and a year of sobriety and moving out and going back into the world kind of thing. It's wild how it all happened.
You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. As ready as I'll ever be. Is that what they say? It was a good idea to stay for a year. I think the last treatment center I was at, I stayed for the 90 days. I was thriving when I was in there. You know, I'd made this album. I was working out twice a day. I felt great and left thinking like, I got this. And then it just wasn't enough time to build enough structure in my life or community or habits, and to go from a highly structured environment to being alone in my apartment again was just a huge shock. And it wasn't that I was lonely, but it was that I was alone. And when I'm alone, I'm like, I can do whatever I want right now. Nobody is gonna know. Of course, they do find out, but there's this like little hedonistic permission giving guy that's like, yeah, let's have a good time tonight. Put a record on and buy some drugs and just lock the doors. And that there wasn't enough time for the, you know, things to settle in. And I'm really glad I spent a whole year kind of slowly integrating back. So, yeah. I'm ready.
Next time you have those feelings, put on a 2-hour YouTube tutorial on GarageBand.
Yeah.
They'll just suck the life right out of you. Just want to go to bed.
Yeah, totally.
But it would be, you know, it's necessary if you really want to, like, that program is, you know, it's endless.
Yeah.
Rabbit hole. So,
yeah.
You know,
I ended up,
if you got a guitar in your hand, you'll be safe.
I ended up redoing the tracking and stuff in Logic, and it was interesting too, because I still didn't pay for it. I did the whole thing because I was in the treatment for 90 days. I did it with a whole 90 day trial. I literally finished mixing it like on day 89. Thanks, Apple.
That's awesome. The math. Now you got another deadline.
This 90 day theme.
All my
man.
Tracks are gonna disappear.
Yeah,
they're gonna claw them back if I don't finish this thing. Awesome. Let's go out on another tune. You want to intro the next one?
Yeah, this one's called Barbie and Bam Bam. It's a song. I got the nickname Barbie at my last rehab.
Timely.
Yeah, yeah. I really like it. It rhymes with Harvey, you know. And there was a client there. It was a co-ed facility, and her name was blank. But it sort of rhymes with Bam Bam. And Bam Bam is also an affectionate slang term for cocaine. And I guess when I first met her, she was like, hey, what's your name? And I was like, my name's Harvey. She's Australian. And she was like, Bobby? Thought I said my name was Barbie. And I was like, no, but you can call me Barbie. Anyway, it's kind of a song that parallels this adventurous, troublesome relationship with drugs. So you could think of Barbie as being me and Bam Bam as the cocaine. And it's a tale of two lovers out for adventure and finding some trouble.
Bam, bam. the purple pass, dreaming and scheming for the relapse. She finished pushing down her pillow, and they were rushing for his pillows. Lucky some choices never last, even the bad ones soon become the past. Secrets are safe between each other, they caught the feels for one another.
Thank you.
It was a lot of fun.